Welcome to the Man Cave Podcast with Dan Casper.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of the Man Cave Podcast, brought to you by our good friends from Toys and Ford and Hy-Vee. Also, shout out to Resonance Branding Company, the official swag provider for the Man Cave Podcast and the Dan Casper Radio Show. You want to get your own swag? Just check out the podcast description, and that link is at the bottom there. On this episode of the podcast, we're going to talk a little Packers, another potential draft pick, first-round draft pick for the Packers. We're going to do a little preview on that. Justice Cleveland's going to be joining me. We're going to talk some hoops and a little golf with Justice. But we lead off with the Milwaukee Brewers. Another fantastic weekend for the Brewers. And now, begin a seven-game road trip here. First four against the Reds in Cincinnati, and they finish up against Baltimore this weekend. But there's been some, we've got to highlight some players who have been off to some pretty darn good starts. One I didn't even mention in the open, but Christian Yelich right now. Did you guys see that massive home run, that towering shot he had over the weekend? Guy's got three home runs so far this season. Three home runs. Hitting 308, he's got an OPS of a 1.033. He's slugging 654. But Christian Yelich displaying some power, some pop in the early goings of the season. Let's tip our caps here to Christian Yelich, a guy that a lot of us Brewers fans have been kind of like, okay, dude, what's going on? You know, like what's... Not seeing a lot of the power, not putting up MVP numbers. Did we have high expectations and such? And I don't think Christian Yelich is going to go out there and all of a sudden hit 40 home runs this year. I mean, I hope so. That would be awesome. But he's off to a pretty darn good start. He's off to a pretty darn good start. And you got to give him some credit there. Willy Adames also has a couple of home runs here. He's hitting 300. His OPS is at a 933. In the early goings here, Jackson Chirio, couple home runs for himself there. Hitting 281, OPS of an 824. Contreras is off to a fantastic start from the plate here. Leads the team in hits. He's got 12 so far. He's got a couple of home runs. He just had two the other night. He's hitting 387, and his OPS is a 1.121. Slugging 677. So the Silver Slugger Award winner from last year at the catcher who just got his award this weekend, he is also off to a pretty darn good start, pretty hot starts. I mean, offensively, we've got guys who are stepping up. Rhys Hoskins, average-wise, just sitting there at 208, but he's got a couple of runs. How about Oliver Dunn? Oliver Dunn, who's played in seven games so far this year, one of those guys that our good friend Brandon Berg, you know, kind of talked about after the roster was set and kind of previewed. He broke it down and kind of gave us a little bit of a scouting report on Oliver Dunn. But Oliver Dunn here is just all he's done in his seven games. Has hit 318, 945. Had that sweet catch last week against, was it the Twins? Yeah, it was the Twins. Rocket over there, third base at the hot corner. Because of his play, we haven't really seen Andrew Monasterio play over there. We haven't seen Sal Frelick play over at third, and I know a lot of that is probably due to because of, Garrett Mitchell being injured and missing time, and then Joey Ortiz has been over there playing some third base, playing some slick fielding defense over there too. But we've got guys who are off to some really good starts offensively. You know, Bryce Terang, a guy that we've been talking about a lot last week, again, he's got seven stolen bases so far this year. He's hitting 360. His OPS is an 854. I mean, he just looks more comfortable at the plate. He looks more comfortable. And he's getting the job done. We knew he had the defense. We saw it last year. My money, that guy should have been talked a little bit more about for a Gold Glove. I think it's a popularity thing a little bit. And I think, sometimes offensive numbers do factor into a defensive award. But Bryce Terang, he's also having himself a fantastic start from the plate. I know it's only seven, eight games in for some of these guys here, But for the last couple of years, last few years, when the main issue for this team has been offense, they're off to a really good start so far. At least I think so. A lot of those guys are. And hopefully, I mean, Bryce Terang, is he going to finish the season or continue to hit 360? It'd be awesome. But more likely not. Is Contreras going to continue to hit 387 and approach 400? Again, be freaking awesome, but probably not. But if these guys can continue to be threats and consistent threats at the plate, gosh, what a world of a difference it would make. And speaking of a world of a difference, Colin Ray has been off to a really good start too in his first two starts of the season. And again, I know it's just a couple games in, and maybe some people are like, dude, you are overreacting. You're freaking out. You're getting way too excited just a couple games in here. Well, first off, the Bucks have been playing like poo-poo, so I got to get something. I got to be excited about something coming out of Milwaukee. And right now, it's the Brewers. And Colin Ray is a guy that I didn't know what the heck to expect from, and I still don't know really what to expect from this guy all season long. I don't know. We got to know a little bit about him, see him for the first time last year, and didn't really know what to expect. It's like, okay, maybe back-end type starter, but he's kind of the second man into the third man, I guess, into the rotation here because of the Wade Miley injury. You got DL Hall in there too. But all Colin Ray has been doing, he's a little bit more. He's the first two games, I think he's been exceeding my expectations. So far, he has just looked solid. He's looking comfortable out there. Go back to that Mets game on the 31st, picked up a win, went five innings. Yesterday, what does he do? Pitches six. Gives up one earned run in both. He's not going to strike out a ton of guys. Did give up some hits, seven total hits there. But if this is the type of performance that we're going to get from Colin Ray, goes out there, eats up some innings, gets you six, maybe even seven once in a while, may give you, you know, may log some hits on there for the other team. But we know that Brewers team's got a lot of good defense, and if he continues to pitch like he has in these last couple of innings, I'll take that any day of the week and twice on Sunday for Colin Ray. No doubt about it. So far, so good. I mean, I don't think there's a ton that we can really complain about when it comes to the Brewers. I mean, we can look at certain guys like Sal Frelick that got off to a slow start to begin the year. Had that nice double, couple RBIs over the weekend. Maybe that's what gets him going here a little bit. Maybe, you know, for some, Reese Hoskins got a couple home runs. For some, probably would like to see him get up there a little bit more than average. But there really isn't a ton that I don't think we can complain about for this Brewers team. So unless you got something that you can let me know, I'm enjoying this right now. What a really fun start. Now they've got Cincinnati, a team that was a very popular pick to win the division this year, to get to the postseason. So we get an early four-game series against the Reds. And when you look at some of the matchups, hey, we're going to get Aaron Ashby tonight. Aaron Ashby was a guy that last year we thought, okay, is he like the next kind of Freddy Peralta guy? They locked him up to a cheapish deal, right? Long-term security for the pitcher. But you're hoping maybe the pitcher kind of exceeds it, plays above the contract, like Freddy Peralta has done so far. Then he gets hurt. We don't see him at all last year. And then they kind of ramp him up this year, probably going to play a little bullpen role, maybe long relief. But because of the Jacob Junis injury, they've brought Aaron Ashby back. He started off in AAA. I'm excited to see what, you know, I don't know how long of an opportunity Aaron Ashby is going to have to be in a starting rotation for the crew. Maybe it's just a game. Maybe he'll get sent back down afterwards. I don't know. But this is a step now. You know, after missing all of last year, hopefully this is a step in towards a direction where we can say, okay, that guy is going to be part of that starting rotation for the next few years. I mean, when we last saw him was in 2022. He was 2-10, 4.44 ERA. He started 19 games, appeared in 27 of those, and he pitched over 100 innings, had 107 innings. I don't know what to expect from Ashby tonight. I don't know what to expect him for this year. I'm not putting a whole lot of pressure on Aaron Ashby, or maybe the best way to say this, I'm not putting a lot of expectations on Aaron Ashby for this season because he's coming off of that injury from last year. But I think we want to see growth now. It's like, okay, Brewers gave him that contract a couple years ago. And it got side-railed by his injury last year. But let's start to see some growth. Let's start to see this is why the Brewers gave him that contract. Trying to see like maybe a similar path to Freddie Peralta, right? I mean, I think that would be the optimistic approach. That would be the approach that we would all love to see for Aaron Ashby. I don't know how long he's going to last tonight. But when you've got all these games in a row now, when you talk about this Seattle series that they just completed, now you're going to have, you know, seven in a row on the road, but then you got three right away at home starting next week. So 10 games in a row before your next off day on the 18th. You're hoping maybe you can stretch some of these starters out a little bit, that they can eat a bunch of innings, because, I mean, you don't want to go to the bullpen too much and really tax your bullpen. Then you're going to have to make some moves and bring some fresh arms up and down and that sort of thing. But I don't know really what to expect from Ashby tonight. Maybe he's on and maybe he can get some quick outs and not have those innings where it's, you know, 25, 30 pitches. And he can go 6-7 innings here and not put a lot of pressure on that bullpen. This Reds lineup doesn't have a ton of experience going up against him. On the flip side, Brewers lineup, you got a few guys here. Christian Yelich has had some pretty darn good success going up against Graham Ashcraft. He's had 15 at-bats. I should say he hasn't had really great success, but 15 at-bats and just hitting 200 against him. That's by far the most. Contreras, though, he's had 8 at-bats, 625. Got a couple other guys here. Monasterio's had 7 at-bats, 429 against him. And then he pretty much just have like a, you know, couple games. Adamas, 14 at-bats. Got a couple home runs, but just 214. But he does have an OPS of a 928. So, first pitch tonight, 540. I hope Ashby looks good. And I hope we start to see that growth from him and like, okay, like if he goes out there and he has himself a great game, maybe that's like, okay, we're bypassing that injury from last year. Now we roll. Now we get her going.
Toyson Ford is your go-to destination for quality vehicles and exceptional service. At Toyson Ford, they have a vast selection of new and used cars, trucks, and SUVs to fit your lifestyle and budget. Their dedicated team is there to make your car buying experience a breeze. They offer financing options that suit your needs and a service center that keeps your vehicle running smoothly. Come on down to Toyson Ford and test drive your dream car today. They're located at 1000 Chippewa Crossing Boulevard in Chippewa Falls. Toyson Ford, where your road to excellence begins.
How you doing, man?
Good. Yeah. It's been a while.
By the way,
happy Masters Week.
Yes, we have started. The piano music is following me.
Oh, I already listened to it for 45 minutes straight in my office before the show, trying to do some stuff. I needed some background music. And thankfully, the Masters YouTube page just has it on loop.
Yes.
Oh.
It's just, yes. It's always a fun week. It really is. And just
and it's your birthday.
Yeah. Wow.
I just remember.
Wednesday. Yep, Wednesday.
Because I remember you always saying it lined up around the Masters.
Yes.
So,
it's always kind of just a fun week to, birthday and then just the best tournament, I think, in golf.
Absolutely. And I know that the Masters themselves were having a little bit of fun yesterday, too, trying to up a little more attention by posting pictures of some guy named Tiger getting some practice rounds out there, which You know, I think all of us, a lot of golf fans are hoping Tiger. Oops, there's a light. I'm trying to figure out your camera one over there too. But I we're all hoping Tiger can go out there and, one, be competitive.
Right.
But also play the whole weekend, which I'm still kind of having some doubts, to be honest.
It's been tough. And, yeah. You know, the previous tournaments he's played, those injuries have snuck up on him. And, it's you know, he's had to withdraw. But I think if there's any tournament he wants to play the whole weekend, and, you know, the last one he won was that 2019. So
yep.
It's crazy we're 5 years from that.
I know, right?
It doesn't feel like that was that long ago, but there's the black hole of time that happened from 2020 to it feels like now we're just kind of getting back into it. So, yeah, I think if he can do that, that would just be great. And if he was in competition and fighting for a chance, I mean, that would even be better.
You want to talk about maybe networks just having some ratings gold these last couple weeks with women's basketball and the potential of Tiger out there on Sunday. Good Lord.
That would be awesome. And, I mean, the PGA Tour coming off a fun finish at the Valero over the weekend, too, when you have McCarthy come back and just shoot a 29, was it? I think it was on the back nine or something like that. Yeah. And then Mahalia, I'm probably saying that wrong, but making that putt on 18 and then winning it in the playoff. I mean, you like drama like that, and that's something you'd love to see happen on just a tight race for it, which I think it will be. I mean, there's so many good players. And like it or not, this is where you get the live players back into the competition there. John Rahm.
I mean, defending champ, right?
Yeah, defending champ coming back. Scheffler's been on
heater
here. We haven't seen anybody this hot since Tiger Woods. So
is he like, for all those who don't like the live, help us Scotty Scheffler? You're our only hope right now for this tournament?
I think so, but now it doesn't even feel like that. I don't even think the people want there to be two. Like, the guys on those tours now are just like, okay, let's just get back together and get this done.
Right.
I think they realize, which is funny because I think we all knew this is what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Is that it wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. You can't sustain two competing tours.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Hopefully this week maybe they make some progress with those talks and we get back to a unified tour.
Is the Masters, of all the events you've gone to and covered, is that number one on your bucket list?
I would love to. I've never been there.
Yeah.
That would be that's probably the one that I haven't been to that I would really love to get to.
I would just like to go there and just like walk the course.
Well, I was watching like the women's amateur, which was a great contest as well. I mean, I was like, man, it would just be nice to go there and watch that.
That's actually Bosold's plan. Like, he's got this idea, and it's not a bad one, but he's like, you know, I'm probably never going to go to the Masters. But last couple of years, he's like, I'm thinking about going to the women's amateur.
Right.
Just to walk the course.
Just got to assume it would be, I mean, it's probably still not easy to get tickets, but easier to get tickets than, because in the Masters, you got to enter a lottery, don't you?
Yeah.
And then you still got to buy the tickets.
Yeah.
Sounds like getting Packer season tickets.
Right, yeah. You might actually have better chances at Packer season tickets for some of that.
So, I mean, I would love to, and I'm probably never... There's not going to probably be a reason. Now, if there's some good golfers out there in this area that someday make it to Augusta, give me an excuse, and I'll go cover it.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that's number one on the bucket list. I think St. Andrews would be right up there, too, as well.
So. Yep, where golf was invented.
Right.
Over there. I know people have downplayed it, but I still want to believe that 18 holes was invented because there's 18 shots in a bottle of whiskey.
Yes. Yep.
That's what I wish.
It makes sense, especially in my game. So
yes. You know, since I mean, I know it's statewide, maybe a little bit more local, but since we're talking about Augusta, how about I don't know if you saw this too, but I saw, you know, he's been on our program before. Gary D'Amato posts this, but because they also had the putt, the drive chip and putt national challenge. Championships.
Yeah.
McKenna Nelson from Beaver Dam won in the 14 to 15 year old age group over there.
See, that's awesome. And the fact that, you know, when we were growing up, Augusta was very, very, very closed off, not, you know, to everything other than your members and the tournament.
Yep.
And now that they've embraced this and now you're seeing that, you have the women's amateur, which was a great, again, it was fun to watch over the weekend, and now you have the Masters coming up. It's such a different place now, I feel like. That's good. That's good because they were very exclusionary. So for the change that's come there, I think they've embraced what they are. They are maybe the epicenter of golf in a way,
mm-hmm.
and have embraced that. And you kick off the season. It's kind of like how Daytona kicks off the NASCAR season.
Yep.
Augusta, really, for a lot of people, is the kickoff to the major season. It is a kickoff to the major season. So I think, yeah, it's one of those things. Fun to get a little more access to a place that was so private for so long.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm gonna, before you leave, remind me I want your pick for the Masters. We're gonna put them up on the good old marker board.
Hey,
here in the studio.
Did we ever do a Final Four pick, or did I not do one?
I don't think I got yours. Oh, but man. What was your Final Four?
Purdue, UConn.
Well, yeah, that's what mine was.
Purdue
too.
Win.
Oh, you got Purdue winning.
Yep.
Ooh, is that a Big Ten thing, or you think Purdue can?
I felt the Virginia getting knocked out early, then coming back and winning it the next year.
Yeah.
Kind of the same thing.
That vibe over there?
Yeah,
yep.
With Purdue. So
mm-hmm.
This is about as well as I've done.
Yeah.
In whatever bracket over at work, and Philip Chorzy, of course, has UConn winning.
Okay.
So if he wins by 10 points because of how weighted the championship games are in all brackets.
Yep.
So if Purdue wins, I win. But if
UConn wins,
it pushes him over the top by 10 points.
Yeah. Let me ask you this.
Okay, Purdue. You heard that. Get it done.
Get it done, Zach Edey, okay?
No
pressure. In your final game after 10 years of being at Purdue.
Right. Yeah, well, Purdue's always got those guys that are there.
I know. They got another one coming, too. Another big guy coming.
Brian Cardinal was there for like 27 years.
Brian Cardinal. That's a name. Holy moly. Drafted by the Lakers, I think, too.
Yeah, and he had decent. Played in the NBA for a while, but
I think he was drafted same year as Luke Walton.
Yeah,
if I remember right.
But yeah, he was one of those guys who was like one of the first 6 year guys, I think. Because then Robbie Hummel, I think, was right after.
Yeah,
like, not right after him, but it was also because of the injuries too.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
It's a Purdue tradition. A tradition on any
big
other.
Man in Purdue, offensive lineman, running backs in Wisconsin. You know, it's Wisconsin used to be big men, like big men who could shoot from the three, but not really anymore. Brian Butch and John Luer and.
Greg maybe Steetsman. Those days can come back.
Yeah, right. So I threw out a poll question since we're talking about hoops. I'd be curious to get your thought. You know, Calipari's going from Kentucky to Arkansas. Last night it was reported that he's moving on there. But let me ask you this. Given how transfer portals and NIL is in college basketball, would you rather be a NBA head coach and deal with the egos of superstars and big threes or big twos or whatever they are, or a D1 college coach where you've got transfer portal, you've got NIL. I mean, there's other layers to this thing here too. If you had to pick one, which one would you rather be a head coach of?
I mean, it's probably more stable right now in the NBA. We mm-hmm. say that with the Bucks situation,
right?
So.
Next question. I already know your answer, but I'm going. Yep.
But looking at that, I mean, I think Calipari's got to change his style.
Yeah.
Because with the transfer portal, that one-and-done style, it doesn't work anymore. You almost have to go back to a traditional, and it's not even like you're going to have these guys for 4 years, but these teams that were getting maybe pushed out by the one-and-done deal
mm-hmm.
are back now because they can go out and find these veteran guys who have been playing college mm-hmm. basketball for 3 or 4 years. And right now, to me, that trumps anything that you have with these one-and-done guys. So for Calipari, who basically that was his MO for the past 20 years, basically, was go out, get these great teams, like the Kentucky team, like the Badger place, have them for 1, maybe 2 years, and then they were gone. Well, I don't know if that's going to happen so much because these more experienced players are going to help you win.
Right.
Like, as much as these young, talented guys are, I think the experience of having played 4, maybe 5 years coming into a place as a senior is really going to help these other teams, you know, bridge that gap that used to be there in college basketball. But navigating all of that, I don't know if I'd want to be a coach in college right now trying to navigate that.
It's almost like you got to play your freshmen so that they will be happy that they're getting playing time. But then at the same time, you got to be active in that transfer portal. You know, you got to go and get – it's. I don't know if I could be a college basketball coach right now.
No, and you're right. Like, how do you recruit people that are going to stay happy not playing?
Right.
Like, unless it's a – like, I think Wisconsin's a good example of that. You know, you have these upperclassmen guys playing, and then you end up losing a couple of your mm-hmm. underclassmen because they weren't playing.
Well, it's like – I forgot to actually mention him in our highest from the weekend. Bo Ryan, shout out, Basketball Hall of Fame.
Oh. well overdue. Yes. That should have happened in 20. He was up in 2015 when they made the final four.
I know, yeah. That would have been perfect if you would have got it then. But
yeah, that should have happened so long ago. But yes, congratulations. I'm glad it did happen.
And that's kind of where you're going. Like, I don't think Bo Ryan style would work.
No.
Because, I mean, very rarely would freshmen play. And if they were, they were coming off the bench. You know, Sam Decker was a sixth man as a freshman.
I'll pose this question to you. What's more important now? Is it getting the recruits out of high school?
Or is it transfer portal?
Or is it transfer portal? I would argue to say that transfer portal right now is more important than getting people out of high school because you're going to at least have guys that have a track record in college basketball where you really don't know what you're getting out of high school. And that, I don't know if that's the way it should be.
I agree. I completely agree with you.
Like when somebody signs to go to a D1 school, what are the chances that they finish with that school?
Well, look at AJ Storr. He's going to be on his third college right now.
Right.
Because I can't see him staying in a draft process, but I could be wrong. Yep. But St. John's, Wisconsin, and now wherever else he's, maybe Illinois to stay in his home state, but that's three colleges in 3 years.
I mean, I'm all for get the name and likeness money. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fine. And
yep.
I think you just got to figure a way out with this transfer portal.
Yeah.
You can't just have them going as many places as you can, but I mean, there's court cases pending.
Right.
And I don't even know how this is ever going to get solved or when it'll get solved. So it's, mm-hmm. it's, I mean, the product is good. Mm-hmm. We can't deny that there's a good basketball product out there.
Right.
It's just a matter of being a fan and how long are you going to be able to see your favorite player play on that team? I mean, having AJ Storr for 3 years would have been great for Wisconsin, but mm-hmm. it's not going to happen because he's more than likely either in the draft or going somewhere that's
looking for $1 million. Yeah. Apparently, that's think about that as a 20-year-old $1 million. You're looking for $1 million right now. I was just looking for $5 so I could go on Water Street.
Exactly.
And, you know, have a 2-for-1.
I was always looking for the ATM that gave you in fives.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, at least I know I have enough to get through the day, through the weekend. So
it was $5 pitchers one night, and I was like, all right, there we go. That's what I got for this week.
No one can stretch a money better than a sophomore, freshman, or junior in college with $5.
Yep.
Trust me, you make that last for a whole weekend. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know where it goes. And, you know, that's part of the thing with, like, guard. Wisconsin more or less has people that are there for 4 years.
Yep.
But now he's got to shift to more of that, you know, finding the person to come in and change that when still mixing it with people that are there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you end up alienating somebody else who signed up to go there as a freshman. So it's a tangled web, and I don't know. I would not want to have to try to navigate that at all.
I'm the same with you, man. I'm completely the same. So speaking of hoops to the Bucks, so one question I pose, I already know your answer, I think, because you've brought this up a few times. Hindsight's 2020, but do you think the Bucks right now are thinking they should have kept Coach Bud? At this point,
you know what I've said the whole time. I've said this from day one. I think they moved on too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I know they had two disappointments after a title run, but man, that's a guy who I thought you could have as a cornerstone, like Popovich for the Spurs, there for a long time, and you navigate the tough times, and you get back to a championship level. They've made a mess, and that's on the ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can't lose in the first round of the Heat. It's like it happens.
Yeah,
but he had a consistency with that team. That when they were playing at a good level, now if this was happening to Budenholzer right now, I think people would really be clamoring for it. But I felt like he kept that team on an even keel. And even when they were losing, at least you kind of knew that they were right there. This team right now is lost.
Yeah.
Especially offensively. I watch them out there and you don't know. I mean, Giannis is driving so much. I mean, he's got to be wearing them out.
Because,
I mean, the offense is either Dame shooting a three, somebody else just randomly shooting three, and then Giannis driving to the lane.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that. I mean, I'm not going to claim to be anything of an X's and O's guy when it comes to basketball, but as somebody who's watched enough, you have one of the best inside guys in the league who's playing way too far away from the basket.
Mm-hmm.
And then having to rush a shot all the time, I mean, I feel like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then their depth is finally, I think, showing itself is that they just aren't that deep of a team.
Yep. And Doc's been playing a lot of veterans. You know,
right.
You kind of wonder now. It's like, well, you get to the postseason, you play all your veterans in your rotation. that bench gets shorter, you kind of wonder about, are they getting exhausted?
Right.
You know,
and like
fumed out. I mean, it's
Connaughton's not been bringing anything really to the floor. Malik Beasley hasn't been bringing any. Mm-hmm. Jay Crowder really hasn't been bringing anything to the floor. You've got, I like the fact that like AJ Green and Jackson a couple days ago had some great, just the hustle that they brought.
Right.
Brooke, I mean, for all the scoring is great, Brooke's not a, cannot play post anymore. Brooke can't slide and move like he used to.
Yep.
And a lot of times you have him playing on the outskirts so the lane's open.
Right.
There's too much of either they're letting guys get wide open threes or guys are able to just drive on them. So, I mean, for Doc, I don't know if I envy him for being put, you know, he put himself in the situation by accepting the job.
Right.
But, man, I think he had to know that this was a possibility coming in mid-season with a team that's just gotten, they've looked lost this second half. There's still time. I'm not going to write that team off just because of the talent that's on it, but also the fact that that talent doesn't seem to be on the floor at the same time ever. So what's the cohesion between Chris, Dame, and Giannis? There's not a whole lot, I feel like.
And you're looking at these last four games, they're still in that second spot, but now Orlando's a game back. You got the Knicks who are a game back. Cleveland's 1.5 pack. Last week, I thought the Bucks had a shot. Okay, you got Washington, Memphis, Toronto. Win those games and maybe put yourself in a position so you can rest some of those guys, clinch up that 2 seed. And now they can't. And now they've got Boston, who they've got nothing to play for, but they've won 5 in a row, and they're going into the playoffs with a boatload of momentum right now. Then you got Orlando twice, and then OKC, who's still battling for the 1 seed. So you got to play your guys in this thing.
What makes you think you can beat Boston's tier 2 team,
right?
If you can't beat the Memphis, Washington, and Toronto combo,
right?
That you played last week. I mean, to lose to those teams and the way they lost to them is just embarrassing.
It is.
I mean, and then to come back and then you have to play a tough Knicks team, and then you lose again.
Yeah.
And I don't know what turns it on here. You have 3-4 games here this next week to discover something.
Yeah. I don't feel good about this right now. But you're right. They got the talent where you'd think it could flip a switch.
Yeah.
And that game last night, Giannis, at least in the first half, was trying to, like, you know, it looked like you could tell he had the mean mug and, you know, trying to carry them. But then that second half was just a complete disaster.
When they are such a jump shooting team now that when their other teams are hitting, it just seems like they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the third quarter. It's been a big third and early fourth quarter. You've just seen them. Just go cold. Man, it's like talking about Wisconsin basketball.
I was just going to say, when you were saying jump shooting, I thought of the Badgers right away.
Right.
You know, settling for jump shots.
People are going to start discounting Giannis. I don't think this is a Giannis problem. Mm-mm. I just think it's a game. You know, it's a lot of strategy. How are you not? You're not going to play traditional post. I get it. But your success factor has got to be better when Giannis is playing within the perimeter than him starting up at half court and trying to drive every time. I know he's got the length, and we'll see spectacular things out of him, but that's just, it's wearing him out, and he's taking lower percentage shots now than you would have seen. So,
right.
Yeah, something's got to happen this week, get something going. I mean, maybe a win over like a Boston, even if it is probably Boston not really playing everybody, would be a big difference maker.
Well, and look at it now, too. Weird how Joel Embiid comes back, and they've won 5 in a row right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you might have to play Philadelphia in that first round.
Yeah.
Which I would not feel good about.
No.
And with you.
So what happens in the offseason now?
You kind of wonder, Brooke has to go? Does Middleton go?
You're not changing coaches.
Yeah.
You already have enough dead money paying 2 coaches as it is.
Yeah.
You're going to pay another coach to leave?
I think it starts, you hit it on the head, I think. You look at like a guy like Brooke, and I think, I mean, Brooke can hit a 3. You know, he can shoot that, but you look at the other bigs who can shoot 3s, they can move a lot better than Brooke, too.
I think this is a big difference of losing Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And Drew is a guy who could really be a lockdown defender. They don't. Even Patrick Beverley, you're trying to have him as a lockdown. Well, he's injured.
Right.
So he's not giving you anything on offense right now because he really can't do much on offense. But Drew gave you both.
Right.
So, I mean, if they had Drew in this mix right now, this is a whole different team.
Yeah, because his Jalen Brunson dropped 40 last night, especially that second half. Does he go off if Drew Holiday's on that court? I don't know if he does.
Right.
Yeah.
And you just see it. It's the defense cohesion isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
The offense definitely isn't there. Now, they're not giving up as many points as they were. but they're not scoring right now as many points either. So it's a weird mess. And you thought the addition of Chris Middleton should have helped things, but it's not even like the main guys. The main guys are getting their points. It's just the after that.
It's the Crowders. Like you said, it's the Pats.
It's almost like they need Bobby Portis to go off for 30 points off the bench to be in some of these games because there's just so much of a drop off with the rest of the bench players. So,
right. Yep.
Yeah. Not a fun month so far for the Bucks, and it could get uglier here as the month goes on if they can't pull things together.
Absolutely. By the way, really quick, so we got to take a quick break. But you know, I mentioned McKenna Nelson from Beaver Dam, who won the 14 girls, 14 and 15 year old drive, chip, and putt. Any guess on what she drove? 14, 15 year old girl division. She's 15, by the way. So,
270.
Pretty darn close. 262. Jeez. 262.
I've talked to you about this before, but like watching these high school players, and the skill and talent and just the amazing ability to drive the ball and just look like pros out there right away.
Mm-hmm.
A whole different world from when we were in teenagers and golf, and I tell you what.
Wow. That's awesome, though. So let's take a quick break, and let's talk a little Packers after these quick messages. Perks. I love Perks. You love Perks. We all love Perks. And one of the best perks you can find in the Chippewa Valley is Hy-Vee Perks. Hy-Vee Perks is a free and easy program for Hy-Vee shoppers. Access exclusive Perks prices, earn discounts on gas when you purchase designated products at Hy-Vee, and save more with exclusive deals, offers, and rewards. The best part? It's free to join. Not a part of Hy-Vee Perks yet? No worries. Just stop by Hy-Vee in Eau Claire to sign up. Start taking advantage of the best shopping deals in the Chippewa Valley right now with Hy-Vee and Hy-Vee Perks. All right, so let's do a quick Packer prospect player. So we are about 2.5 weeks away from the first round of the draft, 2 weeks from this Thursday. And we've been kind of highlighting, focusing on a couple, you know, players that have been either mentioned in like some national mock drafts or Packers players or Packer fans, excuse me, have mentioned these as like, oh, I would bang the table to get that guy. So while we probably have all of our favorites or the guy that we want, we've been kind of highlighting one or two every day leading up to this. Players that have popped up consistently in mock drafts from national peeps, national media, or Packers fans in general. So we've done quite a few offensive linemen. We've done a couple of defensive backs and such. This one is from Chad Reuter from NFL.com. He usually does like a few rounds. Sometimes he'll do a 7-round mock. I think he just did his 5-round mock. Is what I'm looking at right now. But one player that he has listed on there is a linebacker, Peyton Wilson from NC State. Now, I've seen Peyton Wilson. I'll admit it. I've done a few of these mock draft simulators, like Pro Football Network has one and all that. I've done a couple just to see how the boards kind of play out and such. I've seen Peyton in the second round. I've seen him in the third round. And I'll be honest, I haven't seen him a ton, if at all, in the first round besides Chad's mock draft right now. We've had Chad on the program a few times here. Chad actually graduated UW-Eau Claire. Fun nugget there. But he's got Peyton Wilson as a first-round pick for the Packers in his mock draft here. So with that, who's Peyton? Who's Peyton Wilson? Well, we said linebacker from NC State. At the combine, dude ran a 4.43 40-yard dash here. And we know Green Bay needs another linebacker. But if you're going at that 4-3 base defense, we know they need another linebacker. They need some depth over there too. So this pick makes sense in terms of the depth. The only question I would have is it a first-rounder? I don't know if I'd put him as a first-rounder. He's got some injury history. He's got the physical traits, his length, and his athleticism, I think, is boosting him up. But his history with the injuries, I think, is what's going to push him down on some of the draft boards there. But we know Green Bay needs that linebacker depth. Sam linebacker, strong side linebacker, strong side linebacker, bringing in and adding a guy who's 6'4", 235, has some speed over there too. That fits a big time neat. He's got ability as a blitzer. He's a talented cover linebacker. He can play zone. He can play man coverage as well, which fits a lot of the traits that we're expecting for this Packers team and this new defense with Jeff Hafley at the 4-3. So he fits a lot of this. He fits a lot of needs for this Packers defense. The two concerns I have, though, are the injury history and at what point do you draft him? At what round do you draft him? I personally feel like first round's a little too early. Could it be second round? Yeah, okay. I'd be good with a second round pick over there. And I think he's a guy that you can plug and play right away. I think he's a guy that you can plug in, play that strong side on a 4-3, and you can play him day one. I think he fits a big need there. The question marks for me. And maybe if he is a 4-3 and he starts off as that strong side, and you know, when you look at the numbers and the statistics, you know, back in the, you know, kind of how they go now, with how much teams utilize nickel defense, that strong side linebacker might only play 25% of the time. And that might be the other knock. It's like, okay, do you want to bring in a linebacker that only plays 25% of the time as a first-round pick? Maybe you get a little creative, and if he's got that athleticism and that skill set, maybe on a nickel, it's Isaiah McDuffie that comes out on that. You can be creative. You can be versatile in those different ways. But when he's healthy, the kid can play. He's a really good defensive, you know, really obviously one of the best defensive players in this draft, defensive linebackers in this draft. Again, I wonder about the injuries. I don't see him as a first-round pick. I see him as a potential day two pick. But he is definitely a plug-and-play guy. And if he's there and Green Bay drafts him with one of their second-round picks, I'd be happy as a clam. First round, I don't know. That one, I don't know. But he does bring some unique, like, I'd rather have his profile as a 6'4 linebacker who can cover and can blitz on third down than, say, no offense to Eric Wilson, but Eric Wilson, who's like 6'1, 6'2 over there. I like that bigger, taller linebacker, especially if you're going to play on the strong side there and potentially going up against a tight end and such, bringing that skill set into it. I like that part. Again, just don't know. I just don't know if it's a first-round pick worthy. And that is going to do it for us on this episode of the Man Cave Podcast, brought to you by Hy-Vee and Toyson Ford. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to the Man Cave Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you got a few seconds, and if you haven't done so already, but if you have, big thanks for doing this. But if you got a few seconds, if you wouldn't mind, giving us a 5-star rating and a positive review so others can find the podcast. Until next time, I'm Dan Casper, and I will talk to you on the next episode of the Man Cave Podcast.